Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair once again on the magical Isle of Vashon. Last week, of course, I was broadcasting from Cleveland or near Cleveland, where I had gone for the funeral and burial of Mary R.'s oldest brother, Brian. And I reported on that, and I am going to move on this broadcast to some good news. I think it's time for us to have some good news. And so I'm going to devote a good part of my broadcast today on good news in those areas about which I have some interest, and I know that you have some interest because you tell me that you do. So, greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. And in particular, do I send greetings because not too long ago, I was in Cambridge with my son and daughter-in-law, Sean and Barbie. And I'm going to return to Cambridge in early November to celebrate the 100th birthday of the Scott Polar Research Institute. 2 years late because of the virus. And when I was in Cambridge a couple of weeks ago, it was indeed a true homecoming. The temptation is strong for me to keep looking for a piece of property in Cambridgeshire, preferably one with a thatched roof in a village, which is the same as it was before the Norman invasion. And I could take you to such a village. It's called Swaffham Bulbeck. And it is very much the same today as it was 1,000 years ago, except that the streets are paved. There are electric lines running, hey, 90-90 around the village. But the buildings, the church, all of them go back to Norman times. It is a wonderful piece of the past. And it was wonderful for me to be back in Cambridge, and I'm really looking forward to the events surrounding the celebration of the 100th birthday of Scott Polar Research Institute. The binnacle list today carries with it some good news in that some of Captain Joe's people who have been suffering from the virus, and this is an interesting phenomenon to me because a number of these people are people who have been fully vaccinated with four shots. And yet, they have, in one way or another, managed to contract the virus. And so it is my wish and my hope, my desire, and my command from the captain's chair that now the fifth shot is available, that everybody go and get that to protect ourselves as much as we possibly can. I am working to find a queue that I can get into to get the fifth shot, which reminds me that it's also time for flu shots. And those of us of a certain age are particularly vulnerable to that. And so it is time for flu shots and COVID shots. And those of Captain Joe's people who have gotten both at the same time report a certain amount of lethargy, which has been with them after they had both shots. If I can find a queue, which includes, once I get to the head of that queue, if I can find one where both shots are available, I'm going to go ahead and take them. And I am urging all of Captain Joe's people to do that the same. Maybe not both shots at the same time if you're particularly vulnerable to side effects from either or both of those shots. In the good news department, let's talk a little bit about good news. because we are surrounded by things that are tragic. The tragedy of the Ukraine, for example, where civilians, children, women, children, are, it appears even to me that they are being targeted. But certainly, even if they're not being specifically targeted, there is always the children and their, the people that are taking care of those children who suffer the most. I remember seeing all of the children in Vietnam during the time that I was there, in particular up near the DMZ in Da Nang, where there were huge numbers of children and people taking care of those children with no place to go. It is a terrible tragedy, just a terrible tragedy. So in the good news department, we need to reflect on some good news. And one of them comes to me this morning from Apple News. Now, I don't know how reliable Apple News is. I've not had any reason to evaluate it. But the article that came to me this morning says that self-driving cars are essentially going nowhere. Now, I can only say that this is an optimistic thing to have happen. Just as I am not in favor of self-driving ships that have no people on them, in an effort to save the money that comes with a highly skilled and experienced crew, captained by a highly skilled and experienced captain. And so I have been in a number of places in the world with ships under my command where the only way that we could deal with the proper rules of the road situation was because the conning officers and the captains knew what they were doing. They followed the rules and thus avoided collisions. I was one time in the roundabout, which is at the entrance to the Virginia Capes. There is a big charted roundabout there where everybody gets into that scrum, and some ships are headed up to Baltimore, some ships are headed into the Elizabeth River, some ships are headed to Little Creek, and it requires the knowledge and understanding and following of the rules of the road in order to make sure that there no collision takes place. So I am very much against self-driving motor cars. I am very much against self-driving ships. And I'm taking this Apple News report saying that there have been enough accidents with self-driving cars to convince regulatory people that maybe this is not the best thing for us to do. So I am crossing that one off of my list. And if there are further developments in this particular story, in particular with self-driving ships, that I will report on those here. This is the month of October, of course. It is the month of the most beautiful autumn leaf flashing in the up in the Great Lakes area, where the leaves change color very quickly, and especially across what is called the Precambrian Shield, this shield of rock that goes all the way across the top of the Great Lakes. And I have been there when the flashing, the change of colors happens so quickly that if you aren't paying attention, you may well miss it. This is that time of the year. But along with it being the month of great color in places like the Great Lakes, maybe a little bit later in New England, this is also National Pet Wellness Month. Now, those of us who have pets are already taking good care of them, and therefore we don't have to have a special National Pet Wellness Month. But anyway, that's what this is, the month of October. And yesterday, in keeping with pet wellness, yesterday was International Migratory Bird Day. And this came to me through a LinkedIn. I do confess that I am a member of LinkedIn. That and the Coast Guard Channel are the only two social media things that I participate in. You all know my scorn and disdain for Twitter and Facebook. So this came to me from, which is a repost from Dr. Pam Davis. And Pam was with me in the institute at SPRI, Scott Polar Research Institute. She holds a both a master's and a doctorate from the Scott Polar Research Institute at the University of Cambridge. And she is now very much involved with charitable works in the United Kingdom. And she reposted a article about this being International Migratory Bird Day yesterday. I just give you those so that you can log them in your calendars to properly observe them next year, put them into your next year, your 2023 calendars in gold leaf so that we can suitably observe all of those events. In further good news, there was a considerable amount of discussion in various press outlets about both the pipeline that has possibly been sabotaged and possibly is leaking methane gas up through the North Sea. Along with that was a report that was having to do with the power cable that runs very close to that pipeline, and it fed the Danish island of, believe it was Borkum. And there was concern that possibly because that cable had failed, that there had also been sabotage. Now, there's no question but what anything that runs under the sea is particularly vulnerable. And one of the areas in which it's particularly vulnerable is ships dropping their anchors on top of them, on top of pipelines, on top of undersea cables. And it is for that reason that nautical charts show exactly where those pipelines and those undersea cables are. And they have a big warning. And essentially the warning says, Captain, don't drop your hook here. And the charting symbols are such that any captain, any conning officer, any deck watch officer who has learned his charting through his training and his education knows exactly what that symbol means and not to drop the hook on top of those. Well, it turns out that not only was there not any sabotage to this particular cable, but that it was a failure of a connection on the shore side, and that once that particular failure was rectified, all of the good people of Borkum, which is about 40,000 of them, the magical isle of Vashon, by the way, has about 10,000 people, and our power comes to us from Puget Power, now called Puget Sound Energy, but to me it shall always be Puget Power. Our power comes across Puget Sound, and the charts show exactly where that cable is. So now the good people, the 40,000 people that live on the island of Borkum in the Kingdom of Denmark have their power back, and no sabotage, no nothing, no malignant, nothing bad, just a failure that needed to be repaired. So there's another good piece of news that it wasn't sabotage, it was something else. It was something that just needed to be repaired by skilled electronics and electricians, electronics technicians and electricians. Another good piece of news is on our own Mississippi River. Because of the continuing drought in most of the country, the Mississippi River has been low and has had thousands and thousands of barges queued up to be able to go downriver and to get to their destination ports. In a couple of places, the Army Corps of Engineers, which does the dredging for the United States, the Army Corps of Engineers also operates all of the locks, or almost all of the locks in our lock system. They operate the locks at the Sioux, for example, which lower ships from Lake Superior 23, 24 feet down to the level of Lake Huron. And I make a parenthetical insertion here. There's a new lock going to be constructed, and it is going to be as large as the largest of the Poe, the lock called the Poe lock, P-O-E. And end of parenthetical insertion there with the note that there is a new lock being constructed at the Sioux, that the Army Corps of Engineers has been doing some dredging in the Mississippi River. And so there are about 2,000 boats and barges, tugboats and barges backed up, some of them near Memphis. And now they are starting to be able to move them back down the river. There's a huge amount of traffic that is carried, a huge amount of commerce that is carried on the Mississippi, the Missouri, and the Mississippi River, on all of our inland rivers. There is a separate Coast Guard district that covers the inland rivers, the second Coast Guard district. I am not a river Coast Guardsman. I have never served on the rivers, but I am a lakes Coast Guardsman. I have served up on the lakes. And so traffic is starting to move on the Mississippi, the Missouri, the Mississippi River system, and hopefully they'll be able to get all the way down to New Orleans and debouch out into the Gulf of Mexico. The story about the young sailor who was acquitted in the Bonhomme Richard case continues now because the Navy, having lost the case on that young sailor, and a case which I personally believe they deserve, that the Navy deserved to lose, that probably should never have been brought the way that it was. But in any case, the Navy is now faced with what do we do next? And what I am seeing happen is a lot of flailing around and avoiding, for reasons which are not clear to me, the return to basics. We've known since Phoenician times, 3,000 years ago in the Mediterranean, we've known not only how to prevent fires aboard ship, but we also know that when they do get started, we know how to deal with them. And the principles are exactly the same now as they were 3,000 years ago when the Phoenicians were sailing around the Mediterranean. And that is that at the end of each workday, you clean up, you police up, you make sure that there are no materials that can start a fire, in particular spontaneous combustion, which happens with rags and things like that in buckets. And we police up the area and make sure that it is ready. And then what we do during the time when there are no workmen aboard is that we drill. We drill at fighting a fire, and we provide. It is customary in some ships to hold a fire and rescue drill every night during when the night watch is aboard and the majority of the crew is not aboard. And in some ships, it was customary to say, fire and rescue drill, a fire is gotten started in compartment A104-Charlie, and do not provide. That means don't bother to bring all the gear. Not in my ships. In my ships, it was always provide, which means that you bring all of the gear that's required under the watch, quarter, and station bill, and you exercise all of that gear. You start the pumps, and you make sure that all of the equipment is operating. And at the same time, the head of the fire and rescue detail is inspecting that compartment to make sure that everything is stowed properly and that there are no possibilities of anything getting started. And also, should something get started, then that the ship is prepared with the training and the experience to quell that fire immediately. It remains completely heartbreaking to me to watch the film clips of Bonhomme Richard, Bonnie Dick, as she burned and burned to death. As a side note, I watched the press conference that the young sailor gave after his acquittal, and I noticed that there was a Coast Guard officer in his defense team. And I can only remark that he certainly had the best quality defense that could have been provided for him. And the way that the defense handled that was in the highest levels of Judge Advocate Corps professionalism. The next piece of good news came to me today from the National Geographic. The National Geographic, of course, goes back over 100 years, and it was founded by a gentleman by the name of Gilbert Grosvenor, and one of the founding fathers also of the National Geographic Society was Alexander Graham Bell of Alexander Graham Bell telephone fame. So the story is that where we've been so concerned about the death of living corals in many parts of the world, that there is a sign of some really good, healthy resurgence of some of these corals around the some of the equatorial islands. And like the story that I keep reporting about the care that's being given to especially the big blue whales, and the way that ships are being slowed down in order to give them a fighting chance, as the same thing is true with the return of the coral. Nobody knows exactly why this is happening yet, but a lot of good scientific work is being put into this. And so I find this to be particularly heartening, particularly optimistic, as I am always the consummate optimist. And in this particular case, I look forward to hearing more about this particular story. Another good piece of news, the USS Fitzgerald. USS Fitzgerald, of course, was the ship that was in a collision where the crew did not handle themselves particularly well. There were a number of things that went wrong in this particular case. The first one, of course, was that she was in a collision at all. But she has been returned to the fleet. And I have read the press release, not only the press release, but I've also watched the her new captain as he made some policy declarations. And those policy declarations were very congruent with my own way of thinking about how a commanding officer, a newly relieving commanding officer, addresses his crew. One of the things that I always said to mine was that in my ships, there is no whining, mewling, or puking. And if you want to watch a crew all of a sudden stiffen up when they hear that, boy, what kind of a captain have we gotten here? That's a little parenthetical insertion. This captain did not say that to his crew, but what he did say to them was that we're going to return this ship to the fighting fleet. She's going to be managed and handled according to basic and traditional ways of doing business, and those include returning to some of the basics of good seamanship, the basics of good command practice. I wish her every success, and if her captain follows through with the remarks that he made during his change of command ceremony, then she is going to be in really good shape. I'm delighted to have her back in the fleet. The next piece of good news is that the West Seattle Bridge is open. I have not yet transited back to West Seattle from once we leave the ferry terminal at Fauntleroy. We use the West Seattle Bridge to get over to the main part of the city of Seattle. I haven't done it yet. But I have a particularly proprietary interest in the West Seattle Bridge because I was one of the approving authorities for that bridge when it was constructed. The original bridge was taken out by an elision between a merchant ship and the original West Seattle Bridge. And so when the replacement, which is the one that have now, was constructed, it was my job to approve the height clearances so that any ship that could possibly use the West Halibos waterway over which the West Seattle Bridge goes would be able to get under the bridge. She's not a lift bridge. She's a high bridge. And so I approved the bridge. I had nothing to do with the design, but except for the height and for the clearances. But even so, she is partly one of my bridges, and I am... And the Coast Guard has the responsibility for making sure that any bridge which crosses a navigable water of the United States is able to either provide clearance for any ship that might go under it or be able to open and close, because marine traffic has precedence over vehicle traffic. So, good news there. West Seattle Bridge open, and the next time that I go to Seattle, I'm going to use the West Seattle Bridge, and I will report back on whether I approve further. The book for today is one that I was really a little bit surprised at the way that it turned out. It's called The River of the Gods. It is by an author by the name of Candace Millard, and it is the story of the search for the origins of the Nile River in Africa. And it talks about Richard Burton and a man by the name of Speke, S-P-E-K-E, and an African by the name of Bombay, named Bombay because he had been sold into slavery and he had been given the name Bombay by his owner. And when his owner died, he was given his freedom. I bought this book because I needed something to read on the flight coming back from London to SeaTac. But the surprising part about it was that the Royal Geographical Society is very heavily involved in both promoting and financing the expeditions that Burton and Speke and Bombay carried out in order to find the origins of the White Nile. And the Royal Geographical Society, of course, is the organization that was a huge sponsor of many of the Antarctic expeditions, including the one in which Robert Falcon Scott lost his life. And who should appear in this book about the finding of the origin of the River Nile, but Sir Clements Markham. And Sir Clements, of course, was very much an influence over Scott to get him to make the expedition in which he lost his life. I'm recommending the book. I haven't gotten all the way to the end of it, but I am recommending the book. It is called River of the Gods by Candace Millard, M-I-L-L-A-R-D. And I found it particularly interesting because of the connections. And once again, I am all the way up to the end of my time, so it is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. We'll meet again here in exactly 1 week's time. And it is my hope, my wish, my desire, and command that all of you who are responsible for other people watch their six, take good care of them, take good care of yourselves, get those shots, and we will. And this is your Captain Joe, coughing a little bit, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly.